So I would like to introduce Mary Clark. Mary Clark works for the Vancouver Coastal Health Authority. She's at GF Strong, and she also started a new position on the Complex Rehab Team or Complex Rehab Program, working in the community, doing outreach. And she is going to talk to us this afternoon about boredom and what that means. And hopefully there will be some time for questions afterwards. So I will now let Mary begin.
Thank you, Sheila, and thanks to all the Sunny Hill Rec folks that had us for lunch. I've worked in rec therapy for a long time, and we just had this discussion here that in my training for this job, in my degrees from U of A, I never took a class on boredom. We never studied the concept of boredom. We spent a lot of time talking about the exact opposite, how engagement and flow, those are rec words that we throw around. So this topic kind of stumbled upon me, and my goal today is to have you guys look at boredom in a different way, to kind of challenge the way that you have thought about boredom in the past, and hopefully we'll get some discussion going and some good questions back and forth from your sites. So what we're going to cover today is boring boredom, and maybe if I would have called the session something a little differently, maybe there would have been a different response. I don't know. Should have come up with a better name. So for those of you that have agreed to attend to this session called Boredom, congratulations, you're very brave. We're going to go over 5 types of boredom, how you predict boredom, and some tools for you as somebody that might be working with somebody that's bored. So how I got onto this topic of boredom, I'm actually involved in a research study through GF Strong where we're studying boredom and people with spinal cord injuries. Does somebody have their...
Someone has their mic.
Someone has their mic on still, because we can hear you frifling around. Anyway, we're studying boredom and how it affects people with spinal cord injuries. So as part of that research project, I've had to read about 25 to 30 pieces of literature on boredom and disability. So if you think this session might be boring, imagine me reading 35 articles on boredom. I've had it with boredom. So you're getting the condensed version of those 25 things. I should tell you, too, that the PowerPoint handout you have is going to vary a little bit from this one, probably in terms of the order more than anything, but the content is pretty much the same. I just reordered the slides to make them to make things a little bit more clear for you. So I'm going to ask the crowd here, and I hope you can hear that. Well, I'll repeat what they say, but my first question to you guys is, what do you think of when you see the word boredom, or when you think of boredom? What comes to mind? What is boredom?
Nothing to do.
Nothing to do, okay? What else?
Feeling blah.
Feeling blah. You guys out in the regions there, maybe jot some of these down or ideas that you have. So nothing to do, feeling blah. What else do you think of when you think of somebody that's bored or when you've experienced boredom?
Lack of engagement.
Lack of engagement. Just can't get engaged, okay?
Lack of stimulation.
Lack of stimulation.
Lack of motivation.
Lack of motivation. What else are you feeling when you're bored?
Depressed.
Where did that come from?
That was good.
Fort St. John.
Thank you, Fort St. John. depressed. What else? What else are you feeling when you're bored? Lethargic. Okay. So to the complete opposite of boredom, when you think of somebody, well, what do you think is the opposite of boredom? When you think of somebody that's not bored, what are they like?
Interested.
Energetic.
Excited.
Adventurous, engaged, to use the word you were using. Mm-hmm. So they have a purpose, okay? So when you think of this next definition I'm going to throw out of boredom, there's a word in here that we really need to focus on in this presentation, because I have found through what I've gone through in literature and my own experience that the word that should jump out of this sentence is perceptual. Because I have found, and what we're going to cover today, is that handling or helping somebody deal with boredom is actually all about perception management. And I'm going to explain that a little more. Boredom, as you're about to find out through this presentation, it has very little to do with something to do. And it has everything to do with how you perceive things. Okay? Make sense so far? So this boring definition, a mismatch between your desired arousal-producing characteristics and the perceptual or actual availability of leisure experiences. Again, underline that word perception. So what do we know about boredom? Well, we know that long-term boredom can negatively affect growth and development. It can lead to high-risk behaviors, maladaptive behaviors. It can lead to people engaging in things to try to alleviate their boredom that might be dangerous for them. We know that people with disabilities have 3 to 4 more hours per day of free time than their non-disabled counterparts. That's a lot of free time every day. And we also know that the psychological construct closest to boredom is depression. Boredom is a hard thing to define because it's such a cluster of different feelings and perceptions. So the closest psychological construct to it is depression. That's my little cartoon. I don't know if you can see that. The depression clinic with its happy hours, 6 to 8. I like cartoons. I hope you can see them out on the... I hope you can see this graph. So this is the optimal level of arousal. And for those recies in the room, that OLA in the middle, optimal level of arousal, when you're having a good time and you're having fun, you are in that zone. And your optimal level of arousal is a match. You see where it will match on the challenge and the skill of whatever you're involved in. When those are matched up somehow, and I can't move away to show you guys here, but I'm sure you can get it, you are in your optimal level of arousal zone. So an example would be, well, what can you guys tell me? What's an example of a low skill, a low challenge thing that probably most of us are going to do tonight?
Watch TV.
Watch TV. Excellent example. You're still having a good time. It's in your optimal level of arousal zone, but it's a low skill, low challenge activity. Kite flying. You might love to fly a kite. So when you're flying your kite, you're in your optimal level of arousal zone. Now, if you're on a plane and you're asked to fly the plane because the pilot has passed out, that challenge may send you into anxiety because you're like, wait a minute, I'm fine flying the kite, but that challenge of flying the 747, whoa, I'm in the anxiety zone. An exact opposite example might be you love to cook, so you sign up for a cooking class. Off you go to your cooking class, you've got pretty good skills already as a cook, and you go to this class and it's so dumbed down, you're making Betty Crocker cakes instead of learning how to cook. That's a mismatch of your challenge and skill, and you're going to be bored in that class. So this is a nice graph that shows your optimal level of arousal. Perceptions, as you're going to see in some graphs that are coming up, play a big role in whether you're in that optimal level of arousal zone or not. Okay? Keep wanting to say, are there any questions so far? But I'm supposed to keep the questions to the end. So types of boredom. I've actually found 5 types of boredom in the literature. Here's 2 that I'm going to start with. There's no particular order. I just think that these are the easiest to get through first. So the cartoon says just plain nuts as this bored guy's gone to see the doctor. Types of boredom. The first type that I've come across is response boredom. Response boredom is what most people experience when they're in a hospital. It's a reaction to the same old routine or an unstimulating environment. So the first thing that came to mind for me when I saw this was someone in solitary confinement. How long do you think it's going to take them to get bored? Pretty quickly. No stimulation, no nothing. Maybe it's filling out those endless census forms some of us got this year. You're like, okay, really? Same old, how many forms can I fill out? Maybe it's listening to a dull speaker. No comment from you guys. You know, when you're in university, you're like, oh, please, can this ever end? As the dull speaker keeps going and going. So response boredom is a reaction. It's our reaction to the same old. And I would argue that that is a normal part of being in the hospital. When you check into hospital for whatever, guess what? The environment is not stimulating. It's not what you're used to at home. It's not your same choices for leisure stuff. You're reacting to the doldrums of being in a place like this. No offense, Sunny Hill, but GF is just as bad. However, habits to cope with boredom are learned, and if you're in that hospital over a period of time, you might start to internalize. It might no longer be a reaction to a routine, but you might start to think, this is becoming my reality. I'm just going to be bored. This is how I'm going to live. So long-term response boredom can kind of lead into more serious types of boredom that we're going to cover in a second. However, if you're only in for a night, you know, you're going to feel bored, you're going to get home, you're going to be back to normal. Hopefully. Chronically bored personality. Now, I should say, and I laugh as you may, but this is actually a type of person described in the literature. Now, as a rec therapist, and for you recies that are out there, Another reason why this interested me, and I know all the recce's here are going to go, uh-huh, is I have heard probably 1,000 times in my career from other allied staff I work with, hey, Mary, can you go see so-and-so in room 242? They're bored.
Yeah.
And I always felt like I'm not able to offer something like, do I put on my tap dance shoes and go in there and entertain them for the 30 seconds? And I always felt like there was something I was missing in understanding boredom that I couldn't, I didn't have an answer to that staff person of, oh, what do you want me to do? Because I didn't fully understand the concept of boredom. Well, now I'm well equipped. If someone says, hey, so-and-so is bored in room 224, oh, I'm going in and they better be ready for me because now I understand boredom and I'm not going to deal with all of this perceptual stuff. So we'll get to that later in the tools for you. But the chronically bored personality, when I stumbled across this definition, the light bulb that sometimes goes off in my head went off. Because I thought, wait a minute, I've actually dealt with probably 5 people in my career who would fall into this category, and I didn't know it was a category, and I was so frustrated thinking I wasn't doing my job, but then it all made sense. So, got you all on the edges of your seats. Chronically bored personality. The locus of cause is internal, which is interesting. A chronically bored person, it doesn't matter what the stimulation is or the quality of the environment, they are bored. And the difference is they can't feel interest in anything because they are just not interested. Does that make sense? They feel interest in nothing because they can sustain no interest. And that took me a second to grasp, but at the same time, I had a client at GF who I said, he's a chronically bored personality. When I met with him to do his leisure interview, I said, so tell me about yourself. And so he told me a bit about himself. Well, what did you do in your free time? Nothing. Well, when you were at work all day, what did you look forward to doing in the evening? Nothing, really. So you worked for what reason? Just to fill time. So when you got up in the morning, when you thought about your day, what about your day did you look forward to experiencing? Nothing. What about the weekend? Nothing. So, I mean, I'm giving this example, my leisure interview is a lot longer than that, but I thought, or maybe not in that case, I would have walked out. But the other thing about him was he was also a help rejecting complainer. He complained about everything. And when you tried to help him, it was never right. And this personality is the type that no matter what you offer them, it's not good enough. Oh, that'll never work because. They're the endless excuse maker for why they can't be involved. And as a rec therapist, before I saw this, these are the people that I would bang my head against the wall, trying to find the perfect thing that was going to engage them. And I thought, I'm not doing my job because I can't find that perfect thing. Yet, in reality, it has nothing to do with finding the perfect thing. This person has an inability to show interest in anything. And at that point in the literature, it says you need to really look at family history of depression and all those other things. And that's where the construct of boredom is so closely tied with depression. Because this personality, as our psychologist at GF would say, is so close to describing somebody that is depressed that might be the way to treat a chronically bored person is through doing whatever psychologists use and medication and that kind of stuff. So for you rec therapists that are out there, I saw you guys already agreeing on somebody that you think falls into this. And like I said, I've probably had 5 in my lengthy career. I won't tell you how long, but anyway.
Can I ask you a question on that?
Sure, no, we have a question on that.
If you asked a person, don't you feel bored? You're talking about perceptual.
Yeah.
What would he say?
He would say all the time. In fact, I asked him that.
Recognize the fact that he's bored.
Oh, yeah. I'm bored. And you know what?
Repeat the question, Mary.
Oh, sorry. The question was, if I would have asked them if they were bored, what would they have said? And this particular client, of course, I can't say for all of them. This particular client, I did say to him, do you ever feel boredom? And he said, all the time. And he goes, you know what helps me not feel bored is if I drink a 6-pack before I engage in anything. So you see the maladaptive behavior kind of coming in there that we talked about in the previous slide. He's looking for something external to give him that lift when really the cause is internal. So some other types of boredom that I've called perceptually based, now I got the chronic guy out of the way. Narrow tolerance, collapsed, and novice phobic. So here we go back to the graphs. Narrow tolerance, optimal level of arousal. So you remember our graph before, it had that big wide zone of optimal level of arousal? This zone has shrunk. And for some people, the reason it's shrunk, maybe it's shrunk after their disability. Maybe it's always been small. They've never really had a lot of leisure interests that have got them into that level of arousal. But this is where perception kind of comes in a little bit. Because if I go to that cooking class and I think, okay, they've dumbed it down, I'm able to say, well, wait a minute, maybe I'll make the best of it. Maybe I'll meet somebody interesting here. Maybe I'll make a friend. You know, so I can find something in that activity that will widen the optimal level of arousal. Does that make sense to you guys? Shaking your head? Okay. So narrow tolerance is just that it's shrunk. So maybe after a disability, you've had a spinal cord injury, you're sitting in your hospital bed, and you think, okay, I've got paraplegia. At least I can still do this and this and this, but I can't do this and this and this and this. So you still see that you've got some things that you can do, but it's narrowed. A collapsed optimal level of arousal is the person that says, there's nothing I can do now. I am a quadriplegic. I can't do anything. You have a nice job. Thank you very much. Go away. And this is interesting because I ran a free time planning class at GF, and I had a guy attend, of the people that were attending in that one particular class, I had a guy who was an incomplete quadriplegic, so he could walk. And if you looked at him, the only thing you would notice is that he didn't have a lot of finger function. In the same class, I have a fellow who injured himself surfing in Australia, and he's a C4 quadriplegic. And he's in the power chair. He can only move from neck up. So my fellow who's incomplete said, I'm bored all the time because there's nothing I can do. All I do is sit around all day and watch TV. I'm so bored. My fellow who's the quadriplegic says, what are you talking about? I'm never bored. I got my friends, I got this, I got that, and he rattled off all the things he does that interest him in life. And so I said to my client with the quadriplegia, wait a minute, what do you think is the difference here? Because you would think that the guy with quadriplegia who has no movement would say he's more bored than you. Yet you can move everything except your hands, and you say you're more bored. And this client said, it's my perception, it's my attitude, obviously. And I went, whoa. Good for you, the light went on for him. He got a lot out of that class. He's like, okay, I need to think about stuff differently and what I can do and how I look at life. So, a novice phobic, I see this a lot at GF2. These are the people that refuse to try anything because maybe they've been good at something and now doing it differently, they just aren't going to do it. Or maybe they've been an expert at something and starting from scratch is not a role they want to be in. So maybe they were a great skier, and now they're thinking, for me to get back into skiing, I'm starting from scratch, I'm not even going to try. I don't want to look like an idiot. I don't want to look like the new guy out on the block. I'm not doing it. So that's just an example of what a novice phobic, they don't want to be the new ones, the ones that everybody looks at. They perceive that they're going to be the one that everybody notices. Okay? So these five types of boredom, of course, you might not just have one at one time. You could have one, you know, they can interplay with each other. But those are the basic five types of boredom that I've found in the literature. They make sense so far? So this is predicting boredom after spinal cord injury. And I hate to say that you can apply, I'm not going to really say that you can apply this to everybody because it was out of an article that applied to spinal cord injury. But you'll see as we talk about it that perhaps it does apply to more than just the spinal cord injury population. So there are some predictors for boredom. One is how a person perceives their freedom and leisure. So do they feel like they have a lot of choices in their leisure time? Do they feel like they're in control? That can be a big influence in predicting if somebody is bored. Another one is leisure identity. Were they a workaholic? Do they even value leisure? Do they culturally value leisure? That can be a predictor of boredom. Another one is life view. Do they view their life with doom and gloom? Or do they think that they have a future? And I think for some teenagers, that is a big one. You know, do they feel like they have a life ahead of them, or are they thinking, this, my life just sucks? Another predictor of boredom is watching TV. People who watch TV a lot are bored more than people who don't watch a lot of TV. I can explain that later at length if you want. I've had a fight at GF over TV since I've been there. Perception of health. Do you perceive that you're healthy? People who perceive they are healthy have less boredom than people who perceive themselves as having a disability. Recreation participation. That should be a no-brainer. If you're involved in stuff, hopefully, you're not bored. But maybe you are involved in a lot of things and you're not engaged in it. You haven't made that perceptual shift, or it's just not doing it for you. Income, big predictor of boredom. If you've got a lot of money, you apparently have more choices. And length of time since injury, especially after spinal cord injury. Initially, people with spinal cord injury report high levels of boredom, but over time that changes. Why do you think that is, the audience here?
Learn new skills.
Learn new skills.
They get used to their situation, they adapt to it.
Adapt to your situation, yeah. You make life adaptations, you make perceptual changes. Perhaps you stop focusing, the newly injured person, perhaps focuses on all the things they can't do, as opposed to all the things they still can do. So it can be a focus shift too that happens over length of time. So of these here on your screen or on this screen, which one do you think is the number one indicator if somebody is going to be bored? Da na 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 da na na.
Your life view, yeah, life view.
Tied our life view, and this is the first time someone has said life view, so well done, audience here. The top two predictors for boredom are your perceived freedom and leisure. How much freedom do you perceive you have to make choices and control what happens in your free time? And your life view. If you have a grim view of life, you will be bored versus somebody who has an optimistic view of life. So you can see that the top two predictors of boredom very much have to do with perception. What do you think is number three, or tied for second? Or coming in second, sorry. What do you think is the next indicator of predicting boredom?
Recreation participation.
Leisure identity. Watching TV. Watching TV. Now, some of the outpatients I worked with on the spinal cord program, I literally said to them, you have to go on a TV diet. Because when I would talk to them, it wouldn't just be that they had the TV on as background for 12 hours a day. It was that they actually sat there and watched it for 12 hours a day. And not everyone, but a lot of the outpatients I saw watched far too much television. And I know from the research that the more TV you watch, the more boredom you will report. Now, why do you think that is?
Because watching TV is boring.
It's easy entertainment.
It's easy entertainment.
You don't have to engage yourself.
You can veg out. You don't have to be engaged.
Not stimulating.
Not stimulating.
I object.
Okay. Go on, object.
There are some things. I mean, I think TV...
Right. Have you ever watched TV for 12 hours a day? Oh, sorry, she says that some programs can be very stimulating. And you're right, there are some very stimulating programs on TV. Yeah. It's just I know that when I've had this discussion at GF, you know, we look at TV because we work all day. We go home and it's a casual leisure pursuit. We turn it on maybe because we just want to relax and have a glass of wine and we've had a tough day. This population, however, TV is their only pursuit for a lot of them. And so we can say from our perspective, oh, but there's lots of stimulating things on TV. Well, not really between 10 and 1, or 10 and 4, or day in, day out. And I think the other thing that TV can do is it can present an image of life that perhaps is unattainable for many people, and perhaps it reinforces a life that they will never have, so that it ties into your life view and your perception of your free time control. Because a lot of clients think, well, all I can do is watch TV. Well, if that's how you perceive your free time, that that's the only thing you can do, I'm glad I'm talking to you. So, does that make sense to people? Make you think a little bit differently about predicting boredom? So, tools for you guys. So, I get asked, well, then what do you do if somebody says to you, I'm bored? Did anybody ever say that to their parents? I'm bored. I made the mistake of saying it to my mother once, and I never said it again. I'm bored. Well, you could mow the lawn, you could la 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 la, and I went, I'm not bored, I'm going to go find something that I can do right now, because I'm not going to do all these chores. So, tools for you guys. If you are presented with somebody that is bored, go back to these basic things. I use those graphs when I work with adults because I lay it out for them. You're expressing a boredom, a type of boredom, and this is what I think it is. And most people that I've done that with go, hey, you're right. I need to just change my perception and widen that gap. And I didn't know when I first got into this how the graphs would go over with clients I work with, but I got them blown up and laminated so they're right there for me, and you know, we can sit down and go through them. And it, surprisingly to me, has worked really well for some people to actually have it laid out for them in an adult education kind of a format. So when we run our free time planning, that's the first class, understanding boredom, understanding that it is a perceptual shift. And so as a rec therapist, the next part, just after the education part, is becoming that perception manager. And how do you do that? How do you challenge someone's perspective so they think about things differently? And do we have, you know, are you comfortable with your skills to do that, to point out another way of looking at, you know, have you ever thought of looking at it this way? Or yeah, you know, this particular leisure pursuit doesn't seem to turn your crank, but have you thought of it this way? Or do you think you could get something out of it if you went into it with this approach? So it's just asking those particular questions, challenging those perceptions, and going back to the freedom and leisure. If those are the top two predictors, delve in there a little bit. You know, if somebody's reporting they're bored and they've said the same thing for 6 weeks, how are you feeling about life right now? You know, have a chat with them, talk about it. Do you feel like you have any control in your leisure? You'll probably get, no, I don't. I'm stuck here. What kind of control do I have? So then it becomes your role to educate them. Well, you do have control. There's some ways you can take more control in your leisure. But you don't want to turn into like what my mom did and start listing off. Well, you could go to Tuesday night coffee house. You could go, because the reaction will be, wait a minute, you're not hearing where I'm coming from. So do you see the difference? You don't want to be that person that dives in there with the million answers of just activities that the person can fill their time with. Because again, it's not activity. It's the perception of the activity. It tends to be. And I use this, I call this my driving the boredom bus, and here's your steering wheel. And I'm sure all of you have seen the actions, thoughts, feelings, and how that all works together to contribute to someone's health and well-being, and I call this graphic the driving the boredom bus. Are you driving the boredom bus, or are you driving the engaged bus? And starting to challenge those thoughts, those perceptions of how they feel, and it will result in a change in the actions and feelings. Again, more tools, tell the rec therapist if you have them. I know some places don't. And to frame conversations, to focus on things to look forward to, and that also challenge perception. So instead of, you know, what are you doing on the weekend, and you get the nothing answer, what are you looking forward to this weekend? Tell me something that you are looking forward to doing this weekend. You know, like, think about how you say things, because how you deliver a message can influence how it's sent back to you. So if you can become aware of how you're asking certain questions, you may be able to target and get a specific answer back, or something you can use, something you can dig with. And I guess the reason I'm saying to dig is because, oh, there's my recommended TV diet. Again, that goes back to the predictors. Be interesting. Every time somebody told you they're bored, ask them how much TV they watch. See what you get back. Avoid the try you like out cutout, cardboard cutout response. And this is why I say the dig deeper. Give yourself the time to hear what the issues are, because it rarely is nothing to do. Rarely. I mean, we have a rec programmer at GF. She comes in on a sunny day. It's beautiful outside. And she can't get people to do anything. And I'm sure that happens in a lot of places. And we have an amazing rec program on offer at GF Strong. And still people say, oh, there's nothing to do here. Well, that's because it's not about that. It's about the fact that you're recovering from a major disability, and on a sunny day like this, you were probably out mountain biking with your friends, having a carefree day, and today you're sitting in hospital paraplegic. So no matter what we offered, you're perceiving you have a big loss, your life sucks, and I'm not doing anything. And that gets blurted out in the word, I'm bored. So that's what I'm getting at, is the word is just a trigger to get you to dig a little deeper and find out really what's going on and talk about what the real issues are. And at GF, we kind of turned the staff around a little bit, because we said to the staff, hey, next time so-and-so in 242 tells you they're bored, tell them to start attending the free time planning sessions. Because what we wanted to do as therapists was give the control back to the person and say, boredom is your responsibility. If you're bored, don't wait for somebody to parachute into your life to fix it. Take the responsibility, come to our leisure education session, learn something, and start to change your own life. So it was like, kind of like a power shift rather than us going in, diving in to jump in and save it. Get the person to attend the leisure ed session. And it gave the nursing staff something to tell the person. Well, are you attending the free time planning sessions that Rec Therapy offers?
No.
Oh, why not?
They're boring.
Who knows what they say. But at least it throws it back to the person that they have to take some responsibility in fixing their boredom. That might be a little different with adults and children. I don't know how much intervention you would have at that point. Teenagers, yeah. So boredom is a pattern, not a reality.
Okay, thank you, Mary. That does give us a lot of food for thought. I've thought of a lot of clients that we are working with right now that come to mind when you're talking about TV and about some of those different aspects of boredom, the different types of boredom.